Well, hello everyone. I want to welcome everyone to another episode of Bourbon and Browntown. I am your host, David of Browntown, and as always, joined by my co-host, Colin of Browntown. So, Colin, out of all the things we're drinking, which one do you want to talk about today?
Well, we're drinking two things. We have some old-fashioned Jim Beam, as well as a Serpent's Bite, apple cider whiskey, which was on our first podcast.
Hey.
So it's a little nostalgic.
We thought it was going to be gone forever, didn't we? Like, or was it just the store that you bought it from that's gone forever?
I've never seen it before prior to like April of last year, so... Yeah.
But I thought you got it from the store you got it from is like, it was like closing or some shit. Remember?
So it was hella cheap.
You shouted it out.
It was hella
cheap.
And
I don't think they ever hit us up.
They didn't. Damn. That's messed up.
That's fucked up.
Serpent's Bite, where you at? Waiting for that check. Where you guys at?
All right. Well, so if you're familiar with Bourbon Browntown, you know, you're not. In previous episodes that we've had a series going on that we've been referring to as Shy DNA or Chicago Drill and Activism. Recent episodes include Ruby Pinto and Charles Preston, which you gotta go to check them out if you haven't. And they're part of a broader Soapbox project. But Colin, for those who don't know, you know, what Chicago Drill and Activism is, or like why the fuck that's a thing, why are they like in a sentence?
It's a very important thing, guys.
You want to tell them what's up?
Yeah, a little bit. So what started as kind of my final graduate sociology thesis is now becoming a feature-length documentary. And larger cross-platform multimedia project from Soapbox. It's pretty much Shy DNA explores the creation, meaning, and perspectives and kind of really connections between drill rap in Chicago and what I call the activist resurgence or the resurgence of activism we've seen the past, you know, 5-7 years or so. Mm-hmm. They're really the people involved in the movement and in the music. There's a feature we'll explore the various kind of topics and themes through nuanced storytelling, kind of really the lives of these people, the activists, rappers, everybody in between, and really showing how drills is related to activism, just like, you know, the YCA alumni and the chance to save money Chicago rap is as well. You know, it's all kind of connected to the same kind of inequality and resistance we see in the city. And we've seen the city over the past several years. So that's what we're exploring, and we're doing it very integrated and very amplifying the people that are already doing the work, including Tweek, who's here with us today.
What's up, Tweek? How you doing?
Yo, what's up,
I see you on your phone here, like, make sure, like, I'm going to catch this.
Oh, for sure.
You got
sure.
A little phones bit. On us right now. It's amazing. I feel like a star.
I'm feeling pretty smooth right now. The bourbon is flowing in me,
Hey.
So I'm feeling good. I'm seeing some fresh new folks, some faces here, so I'm down to get shit popping.
It's all love.
Yeah, and so you know, Colin. You met Colin. Colin, how'd you meet? How'd you meet Tweek?
We kind of met. We like knew each other before we knew each other.
Word. Ashley, was it Ashley?
Yeah, it was Ashley.
Ashley, who
so
put
shout
us
out to Ashley O'Shea.
Yes,
who's doing an unapologetic documentary on Black women in Chicago doing activism.
Shout out to the Black women.
Yeah, so when I was doing the research part of Shy DNA, when I was in school in DePaul, I was looking for folks to interview, and she's like, "You should interview Tweek." Ashley told me this, and I was like, "Bet." So Tweek and I tried to hook up for an interview, and just our schedules didn't match for both. We were busy.
For the whole summer, we tried.
And she was super aggressive. Like, I emailed like a motherfucker. She was responding, and like, she was responding.
We
just couldn't get it together.
She's like, hey, I'm trying.
Because one thing I could say, this dude, I swear to God, is the most consistent dude
Bro,
I know when it comes with emailing. I'm like, this dude don't let up. Not to say that it's a bad thing. I'm like, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't even remember half of the shit he'd been asked. He's like, yo, so I'm like, not trying to pressure or anything, like, but the email, like, did you get it? I'm like, yeah, I got it. He's like, cool. But still, I'm like,
if he didn't, no big deal.
He's like, it's only on your time. Like, I just sent it to you again. Yeah. So it's like, this dude, he be on his shit. I'd be one, sometimes I'd ask him, like, yo, you want to be my manager? Please say yes.
But I get into that line of work, I'm going to hit you up right away.
Hey, for sure.
Long story short, we never linked up for the actual part of the, you know, Shy DNA, the academic part. But I was like, hey, this is going to be a documentary or a bigger thing in the fall. We got our shit together, and here we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of kept in touch. And we first met for the first time was at Charles Preston's Church on the Nine.
Yeah.
Kind of spoken word, corner cipher. You hear about that in previous episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But just a little background on Tweek. Do you, Tweek G, if y'all don't already know. Mm-hmm. Tweek G is a rapper and activist who has been on the front lines of two successful grassroots campaigns in Chicago, which you can't always say, by Anita and the Trauma Center Now at Youth Chicago. Mm-hmm. Her aggressive and truthful lyrics have been incorporated in the movement, most notably in the now infamous hashtag Real Talk, which targets Rahm's administration after the Laquan McDonald shooting and cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised in Chicago, Tweek spent about 6 years or so in the military and now simultaneously traverses Chicago's activist and underground rap scene as an unapologetic black queer woman ready mm-hmm. for her next project.
Definitely.
I love it. What the G? What the fuck's that?
The G.
What the fuck's that? Like, what the G? Like, easy. Like when I first saw it, it's like Tweek, and then I think I was like, you know, checking out a bunch of your stuff on YouTube and stuff, and it was just like Tweek. There's always like the dash G. So I'm like,
Yo. So first of all, Tweek, the name Tweek was given to me by a high school best friend. I think it was my freshman or sophomore year.
Yeah.
She's like, yo, man, you tweak. You always tweaking. You doing something. I'm like, yeah, pretty much. So the name fit. And I tried to give her a little nickname, too, but the shit really didn't stick with her. So Tweek became my name. And growing up, I literally didn't too much have my own identity. And what I mean by that is no one remembered my name.
Yeah.
No one. I was always, hey, that's Suge's daughter. That's Lil Juska. That's Juska, Lil Sister. Oh, that's Bam, Big Sister. That's Jenny and Jack. I'm like, damn, my name that they're hard to remember. It's, you know, probably because I always snap on people when they don't say my name correctly. It's not Jasmine. It's not Jasmine. It's not Jasmine. It's Jasmine. That's Jasamine. Just one extra letter, but I think it throws everybody off, so they make up shit. I mean, so I'm like, look, just call me Tweek. She gave me the name Tweek. I started introducing myself everywhere I went as Tweek. When I was an ROTC in high school, instead of my last name, which is Harris, mm-hmm. I was what was called the S4, Supply and Logistics. I had to type up the names to get shipped to the warehouse so the cadets can have their names. Guess what I put in there? I slipped Tweek in there.
Hey.
So when everybody see me and they're like, yo, you actually got Tweek on your name tag? How? I say, don't worry about that shit. G shit only, you know? So it's just been Tweek. The G comes from, it's funny because I used to go by Tweek the RBG, which stands for Tweek the Radical Black Girl. I felt like I dropped off the R&B because my slogan is I dropped the R&B because ain't shit sweet. I'm always radical, always black, and you can see that in everything that I do. But the G stands for seven things. Hold up. It stands for gay, gifted.
She's getting her notes.
Great,
right now.
Gay, gangster, god, goofy, gifted, and ghetto. So someone asked me, why did I put ghetto? I'm very big on turning negatives to positive. And ghetto is always deemed something negative or just a poor, or this is where black ratchet people come from. I also embrace that ratchet shit as well, too, because all of that black, the ghetto, growing up poor, all of that shaped the young woman that I am now. My experiences shape the direction that I'm heading in now. It's the reason why I do everything. It's the reason why I became an activist. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why I became an organizer. It's the reason why I talk the shit that I talk in my music. It's the reason why I call it the folks that I call it my music. So to those who think ghetto is, oh, it's bad, I'm like, nah, I'm ghetto fabulous. So I brace that shit, you know? Yeah. So Tweek G, AKA G7. That's what that
G7.
Yeah, right. G7, baby, stands for seven. #G7. Yep, Tweek the God, man, is gay, gifted, great, God, goofy, ghetto.
Did you always, I mean, I feel like when I first heard of you, it was just Tweek. And then I saw all the G. Then I saw like, oh, G. Like,
it was just
Tweek.
Is she
going to be mad if I just say Tweek? Should I always say Tweek G? Like,
you know what's funny? And I blame this on myself because no one really knows what to call me, how to introduce me from performances or whatever. They'd be like, oh, Tweek Harris. I'm like, that's not my name. It's just my name on Facebook. That's not my performing name. And then I'm like, you know what? I say to myself, I'm like, yourself, you did just change your name like 3 different times, so they really don't even know.
Like,
so yeah. I was like, okay, it's Tweek G. But AKA Tweak the God, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Just like Diddy and P. Diddy, Diddy, Sean Combs, Pump Daddy. You know how many Combs? Like 2 Chainz, Titty Boy, you know? Lil Wayne, Lil Tunchi, Lil, you know? Oh, shit, I got my sub names too. Yeah, Yeezy, Ye, Kanye, you feel me? So, shit, I want my several nicknames too.
Colin, we slacking, man.
Yeah.
I think I have one. It's Colin. People call me C-Hud in high school.
C-Huddy, yo.
That's pretty much it.
Capital C, though. It's funny. So you're from Chicago, right?
Oh, born and raised all 24 years. On the South Side, baby.
We were having a conversation on, like, how else to push the Shy DNA project, you know, and Bourbon and Brontine. Like, we'd like to bring things that kind of aren't always... available to people, really, like the individuals themselves have been able to bring about realities that some people may not have been familiar with. And I think something that I was surprised even like before meeting you was like, you know, like I've seen your music videos, like I've heard some of your freestyles, and then like I end up finding that you've also served in the military. Like that was like, I was surprised. Like how'd that come about in your life, or like how. Or like, is that something you talk about often, or how do you maneuver that?
So my first taste of ROTC was in grammar school, elementary school. Okay. Yeah. I was in I can't remember the grade. Anywhere between 5th and 7th grade when one of the teachers, a parent of the LSC, you know, board meeting type stuff, and he started helping out at school. He started a color guard. So when we would have, you know, assemblies or whatnot, we would have a color guard ceremony. I was into that shit or whatnot. And I was the only girl. And my little brother, I got him on and pulled him in too or whatnot. And, you know, we learned how to do the movement, the drill movements with the rifle, with the flag and everything. All right, cool. Joined high school. I mean, graduated, went to high school, joined high school. Like, this shit's actually, like, it's a choice.
I mean.
I had a choice. We all did. It was PE. No,
but you're right, you're right. I'm just teasing. we got to keep going. We have a topic to talk about.
It was PE or ROTC.
Yeah, for sure.
PE, I didn't like for the simple fact we didn't do shit. I get bored quick. The girls, gossip. Got the girls in high school.
Was it like
really
co-ed PE?
It was co-ed PE. So different period, whatever. If you have that period gym, you got that period gym. Right. So girls gossip, dudes might shoot around, play ball. I was just bullshit, hang around. You know, maybe rock the track a couple of times if it's the summer. I'm like, that shit's boring, bro. Yeah. I joined ROTC. It was the best thing I ever did as far as building a fan base, getting very popular, meeting a lot of people. That's what I was all about.
How did you build a fan base in ROTC?
So.
I'm just ignorant. I don't know.
So.
That's a good question.
Before, you know, I got real deep into ROTC, it was rapping going around the school, you know. Mainly dudes, they was battling or whatnot. And one of the homies found that I rap. I was like, yo, I rap too. And they like, yeah, spit that shit. Oh, Tweak from the spit that shit. Hey. So. I never used to battle rap. It was always my sister calling, yo, so-and-so said they could beat you in rap, or they can beat you in rap and spit that shit. I spit that shit. So going around the school, that's what I do. I would start battling people.
Yeah.
There was two other girls that I met. My homie Asia, my homie Kiki, my shout out to them because they definitely some dope talented ass. Black rapping women. And then we started battling type shit. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. You know, but whenever I do something, I want to be the best at it. I became Shorty that was rapping. Shorty that got flow. That's how I was. That's how I got my clout up. That's how I became popular. Then a lot of people didn't know I was a freshman. You know, it's freshmen hanging with the senior. They found out you're a freshman. They're like, damn, you're a freshman. I'm like, damn, why you got to be loud type shit? You know? So ROTC, I was cool. You know, I was cool. I used to wear braids. My braids was always designed, cold. Shout out to Gia. Cuzzo, she definitely braided me up all the time. And my cousin Tierra, my cousin Porsche. But in ROTC, there's like, yo, Tweak, you cool, Joe. We fucks with you. You could rap. And I was cold at ROTC. So ROTC, I started joining like the color guard, not the color guard team, the rifle team, regular drill team, shit like that. And I was just consistent with this shit. I was good at it. And that was that. And as far as Tweet, it was the name, and the shit was, it was just a rap after that. Everywhere I go, it was Tweak. I would literally write my name, Vandalaz, on every fucking thing that I can without getting caught. Tweak.
Old school Brandon.
Tweak. Yes.
For social media.
And the reason why I was so big on my name, because of growing up in the shadows of my siblings or my mom, this shit irritated me. So, Tweak, ROTC Kid, and Shorty that be rapping. It was this dude in high school. He called me Rapper Girl. Lance. That's his name, homie or whatnot. He was an older homie. He was like a junior when I was a freshman. Right. He called me Rapper Girl and whatnot. And then shit was just up after that. I rapped. I was always battling somebody. Matter of fact, it was this one dude. School was ending our freshman, sophomore year or freshman or whatever. I can't really remember. He purposely came and hunted me down to say, yo, come battle me. We in Mr. James' room. Shout out to Coach James. And Derek had an ass whooping he did not know was coming. I kid you not.
Derek got that wop.
It was a class full of upperclassmen.
Ooh, in front of his homies?
Yes. Derek is in my grade.
Oh, God.
It was upperclassmen we didn't know. And so he went first. He did his shit. He rapped too, of course. He did his shit. And then I just bodied it. And they like, damn, he felt shitty. I could tell in his face because it's like he came and searched for me. He searched for that ass whooping type shit, you know? He searched for that ass whooping.
Hashtag he searched for that ass whooping.
It was no bad blood between me and Derek. You know, he gave me my project. Like, yeah, man, you killed that shit. What about that? He like, yo,
I mean, he had to. He was going to walk off salty as fuck.
That shit was you, sir.
Fuck this motherfucker.
Then, of course, after that, it's like, yo, we need to get on the tracks together. Sure we do.
So where'd you go to school? Like, where did all most of this
place? Hey, I'm an HPA Thunderbird alumni, man. I went to Hyde Park Academy. Me, 2008, September, I went in there on some. I was undercover. I was in the closet when I went. I was not openly serving as gay. No, the shit was a journey. No, that was me.
Oh, that was great. I wasn't looking.
I cannot wait.
That was wonderful, man. That shit.
So two questions. Maybe it's coinciding. Maybe they don't. When did you come out? Tell me about just that, and two, tell me about like going from high school to the military.
So, which one you want to know first? How I came out as gay?
Whatever makes the most sense.
So this is the funny part.
I love funny parts.
I've been a tomboy at heart, regardless of what I'm wearing. I don't care how tight my jeans is. You could catch me with a ball in my hand, trying to throw it or whatnot. No, I do not know how to play basketball. I suck at that game. I don't identify myself as a stud anymore, but I be telling people, all studs do not ball. I do not play basketball. I'm the one that be on the bench trying to get the ladies. This was before I was taken. That's what I was up to. Like, nah, I wasn't all that type shit. So I was undercover, but those of you who could sense it, Gator, whatever you want to call it, they knew. But I wasn't, my self-esteem was very low. Mm-hmm. I didn't have much confidence. So it was kind of like a cover-up when I would mess around with guys. I was not attracted to them in any type of way, mentally, physically, emotionally. I mean, my boyfriend from fifth and fourth grade, that shit really don't count. I think he still counts it. But
he
shit,
still counts it? That's so funny.
Yeah, he still counts
of
it.
Of course that.
Because this sucker owes me $50. Ooh. You know your name.
Hey, where you at?
He owed me $50.
About to show up.
And he told me he wouldn't pay me back. That's what she get because she's gay. That's what he said. I swear to God. And that only shows me that you must be hurt, bro.
Yeah.
That must be hurt.
We were fourth and fifth grade, though. How old are you? Like 9?
I don't know, man. 8. But we was together like 6, 7, 8, but whatever. So I'm in high school and then a rumor got started.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, I wasn't Tweet then. It was Jasmine. She, oh, she's gay. Whatnot. And then I was like, immediately, what? I got to kill this rumor type shit. So
where is this rumor?
People come to me like, yo, what about Bam? So-and-so told me this. All right, who told you? So I go to that person.
Right, you
literally, I swear to God, after they told me that, I go to that person. Finally got to the horse's mouth.
Right.
Who tell me like, yo, why you? No, so and so shit. And then I start dealing with ladies like, ugh, she gay. I had to set the record straight. Just because I'm a woman who likes woman, women doesn't mean I'm automatically attracted to you.
Right, yeah.
Because who said you my type, you know? It was that type of shit, you know? So when I came off like that, people was like, ooh, okay. Shorty, spicy type shit, right. You know? Maybe I'ma, you know, play this out. So that's what it was. And then the end of my freshman year, I started to change the way that I dressed. My pants became... I started doing one clothing item at a time. My pants was the first thing to change. They became more baggy. I started actually buying man jeans.
Yeah.
Still have on the fitted type girl shirts.
Yeah.
I will always have a snapback, always. My best friends at the time told me they were homophobic. That was another reason why... It was kept under wraps.
Or during this change.
Oh, beforehand.
Okay.
And once I overcame, I really can't recall what happened in me, but I just was like, look, I'm tired of this front and shit.
The bullshit.
I'm tired of being something that I'm not. If you fuck with me, you go fuck with me. You know, so what? I like girls. So
That got to do with you.
What, exactly. Like, you nothing.
Unless you cute, then like, hey, that's a whole nother story.
My friends were cute, but the first thing they said when I told them, they were like, oh, I already know. And then they were like, but did you like me? And I'm like, no, I always looked at you guys like sisters type shit, you know? Then after that, the shit was easy. It was a cake. Being myself, it was, they accepted
out there
me.
You kinda owned
yeah, they never judged me. They never acted funny. They never, you know... Say, oh, Tweek, you can't hang with us anymore. None of that shit. You know, it's like, we kind of already knew we was waiting on you to say something. It was like, oh, shit. You told me you was fucking homophobic. Like, how easy did you think
you
were going to be?
Why'd you make it so hard if you knew the whole time?
Then after that, man, it was just, I was out there. I was just very gay. Out there. And it's funny because the gay cliques that was going around, they like, we know you gay.
Yeah.
They're like, well, you gonna come around and like, hang with us. And like, I would hang with them. I would even go as far as to flirt. But when anything goes past that, I shy away because it's like, ooh.
Like, yeah.
That shit was funny as hell, man.
But, so you graduate high school and then what?
So college was never an option for me as far as I didn't like going to school, sitting down, listening to lectures, writing papers, all that bullshit. Homework.
I like that bullshit.
Homework, what? I never really had homework because I wouldn't do the shit at home. I did that shit next day at school when they asked for it. Like, hurry up, let me get it. You know, I did enough to get by. That was my freshman year until I started getting discouraged and feeling sad when I seen my classmates. All A's and B's, college accepting letters or whatnot. I still didn't change my mind about going to college. It just changed my mind about, hey, get on your shit, get some good grades.
Yeah, getting on it.
So ROTC, I was in it all 4 years of high school. And then that's when I made my mind, like, yo, I'm going to join the Army. I'm not going to high school. I mean, I'm not going to college. Ain't got the funds for even these grants or whatnot. And I really don't have the grades.
Mm-hmm.
For some big ass full ride scholarship. I'm not taking out no loans and be dying in debt like my homies is now. Shout out to them because y'all did the damn thing.
I'm right here next to you. What you mean?
Yeah, y'all get right here.
We are all right here.
Oh, no, man. I'm grateful that I ain't got Sally Mae down my throat. That's all I'm trying to say. Woo. But.
Hashtag fuck Sally Mae.
Oh, fuck her. Hell yeah. And so I enlisted in the Army 2012. It was also a rough time at home for my family.
Sure.
They provided a temporary getaway from that. Also, the recruiters would come so often, like, yo, we trying to recruit you, we're trying to recruit you. I would lag on going to take my ASVAB. I hate tests. I'm not a good test taker. And I was kind of like nervous about it, not scoring high. And I was just like, I ain't ready. The ASVAB to get into the Army.
Okay.
Test.
I forget what the hell the ASVAB stands for, but this is around the time when they was literally letting any and everybody type in because, like, they needed some numbers, I guess. And so I went, I joined. I didn't go active duty. I went reservist. which is part-time. I go away one weekend out of each month, two to three weeks in the summertime for what's called AT, annual training. Then my 6 months of training is boot camp and AIT, which is advanced individual training. Then I came back home April 2013. Didn't enroll in school, got a job, started working, and that was pretty much it for me. And then I became an activist though in 2010. Yeah, and when I came back, I just continued that work.
Yeah, it was like I know maybe two or three like people who I was relatively close to who did that exact same thing. Sort of like they enlisted in some form, like they were reserves, and like I think one of my boys, what he would do is he would leave like 3 weeks at a time, but maybe like two or three times a year. I'm not entirely sure, but like is ways it's in which like that, it kind of works out on some
probably,
shit. And like
he probably got tasked with some mission.
Yeah, on some that happened to me. And like too. I haven't really spoken to him since for a few years now. But it's like that's something that a lot of people find themselves with. You know, if like you got certain routes, either like my route was you get a job or you go to school. Like I don't know, I calling what you
well,
would think about.
Well, not only
like,
that, now that I'm out. Yeah. When I became an activist, I see what the recruiter tactics were.
Right. That's
they
all I get.
Pray. Yeah. It's kind of like praying type shit. Yeah. Because they have quotas they have to meet. So the starting point is high school. Guess what? Get the ones that's not going to college. Or, hey, go get the ones that are going to college, but say, hey, if you join this, we could give you money for college.
Right. You can pay it off.
So the people who I joined, my battle buddies around the time I was joining, a lot of them were in for the benefits only, not because they're like, hey, I want to join this country. It's the greatest shit ever.
No.
Not.
Yeah.
But they joined for those reasons. And for me particularly, especially the high schools that are in fucked up, poor, pissed communities. They know these kids not going to college. We don't have the resources. So here it is. Hey, we could give you $50,000 for school. We could give you this, X, Y, Z. And recruiter, you know, this is what they do. They selling you a dream. Once you sign your name on that X, you belong to Uncle Sam. So that's what it was. And so I was like, all right, cool. So I took that shit.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything else to fall back on. So I took what was in front of me. And that was what was in front of me.
And you say you have that framework now looking at it.
Yeah,
like, while you were like, in the shits, as they say. Was it, did you have that then, or how did that evolve into what it is
so
now?
So before actually signing my name on my contract, the people who I was organizing with begged me, told me, Tweak, don't go. This is that. This is what it is. This is what you would be doing. This is what you would be labeled. This is what you would be a part of. But also in the same token, I wasn't presented an alternative for that.
Yeah. Like, okay, you're right. And you got to pay my bills.
Exactly. And for the situation I was in with my family, when I tell you piss broke, I mean just that.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody working. You feel me? Ain't nobody got dough coming in. You know, it's five of us. You know, my mom was dealing with an illness of her drug addiction at the time. So it's like, I ain't got no money for this shit.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, so it's like, I'm just join the army. I'll be back. Like I said, it was also a temporary getaway for me. And during that time of getting away, I was learning myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was 18.
And then you come back, and so you're a raptivist. Like, what does this mean? And like, yeah, what does it mean?
So I never really so much as labeled myself a raptivist.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a conscious rapper, because I don't just talk about conscious shit or the good shit or social justice issues or whatnot. I talk about a variety of things, but that shit in particularly, since I rapped and once I came onto the field of organizing, becoming an activist, I said, hey, how can I intertwine the two type shit? And put the issues that I'm fighting for and working on in my music. This is the way to reach the people. It's also a way to inform the people.
Right.
Music is a universal language. Why not do it?
Yeah.
So I start incorporating the shit that I work on, we work on in the campaign in my music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Real Talk came about.
Right. I think that's important. I feel like you, especially just like with all music, with all things that kind of, or in the pop culture lexicon, if you will, it's like everything's got to be labeled. It's got to be some kind of thing. So there's conscious rap. There's like backpack rap. There's Chicago.
I do not. Exactly. I do not like to be boxed and categorized or some shit. Not tweak.
So how did Real Talk come about? And then what was the grassroots activism that you were involved in that it reflects that vice versa.
So
wait, what is Real Talk?
Real Talk is my first track that I put out to the public. As Tweak G, Tweak the RBG as an artist. It's also the first track I actually did in years as far as on the music tag, because I gave up music like 8-9 years ago. So Real Talk came about after the dropping of the Laquan McDonald's video dash cam footage of bitch ass officer Jason Van Dyke emptying the 16 bullet clip into Laquan McDonald. Watching that video infuriated me. The rage built up. I was a part of a collective who organized, who was holding space for Black Rage, for us to come together and express how we felt about this. Seeing someone who looks like us, our brother, not from the same mother, but bonded by the struggle, lynched, martyred and lynched on TV. This video is played for a world, just being paraded out. Oh, look. What you think that do to us, you know? Mm-hmm. So a campaign was started by the same collector that was a part of by Anita, which to get the corrupted state's attorney at the time, Anita Alvarez, who helped cover up the Laquan McDonald case. So Real Talk came about because of those incidents. So I started talking about it in my song. I talked about the food deserts we face on the South Side, about the vacant lots, about how these same crooked cops y'all thinking we need more of. I posted on every block out east, over east, from 79th and Stoney all the way to the actual lake. It's a cop. It's a unmarked car. They actually be out patrolling on feet or on bike. You feel me? Mm-hmm. And they turn around and sort of kill the Glock or pushing drugs. You know? Right. So all of that was expressed in Real Talk. The title Real Talk came about because it was literally some last minute shit. I really didn't know what to name it. I'm like, man, that's some real ass shit right here. Real Talk, pound sign. Pound sign came about because it's like, it was kind of like a strategy tactic as far as if anyone else was to put pound sign Real Talk and they search it,
find it or somehow. That hey, track that's come smart. Up. That's real smart. Yep.
Learning.
Yeah.
And I like Real Talk for a lot of reasons, but one is that it's I feel like when you have music that's activist oriented or talking about some real shit, it's doing it in a way that's very it doesn't sound like Real Talk. It's not aggressive. It's not calling out certain people, certain things. It's being very vague in its language. Mm-hmm. Where yours is calling out certain people who are in office at the time it's happening, and it's important and it's timely, and you don't hear that all the time. And it's also very Chicago.
I got you.
Because Chicago ain't for none, right? And so Chicago's got this attitude about it and embraces that in the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that you also got to embrace in the song is obviously it's targeted, you know, after Laquan McDonald, it's targeted at Rom, it's targeted at Anita, Gary McCarthy as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
CPD period. Cops
hashtag,
period.
Hashtag fuck 12.
Always.
But it's also, you have things here and there, like the food deserts, things like that are issues outside of just policing. I think people hear Black Lives Matter or things like that, they think it's, oh, but like they're anti-cops, it's about policing and like, you know, prison abolition. It's like,
it's the reason why we're like this.
Right, but it's about, like, it's about food deserts, it's about water, it's about environmental justice, it's about equity on all these different spheres.
It's about,
and you kind of touch on all
it's about providing
well.
For the people the same, taking away the resources that the people should have and defund the cops. So this is for people who don't know, they're trying to build a $95 million cop academy.
I know, we talked about that. No, we had Ruby in here. You know
exactly.
Yeah. So she quoted hashtag No Cop Academy.
You know,
like, yeah.
Definitely No Cop Academy when we got food deserts, when we got schools, high schools, grammar schools closing, and y'all want to fund the goddamn Cop Academy. The same cops that's in our neighborhoods patrolling, harassing us, falsely convicting us, beating us, pushing drugs in our neighborhoods, pushing guns, these same guns y'all say we got, we whatever. How y'all think we get them? Come on. Little man and them can't get them. We can't, because they little, they young, ain't got the proper credentials, whatever.
It's layered.
No, we talked about the song.
I'm talking about like lasagna layer.
No, it's great. And like, and like part of that, like you can actually check it out in like a past episode where we kind of talk about like, you know, the social determinants of health, you know, how like you see that in your city. So check that out, episode 7. But like continue going through that. So we have real talk. You come back from the military, you start, you know, raptivist, right? And so it's like raptivist. So you have your mainstream, your conscious, so which we've kind of already talked about, but then you also have that against like a like a backpack versus like a rap, and then you activism, and then like drill. So it's like, which is kind of where you start falling into the our conversation more here, is like your music itself, how has that grown, and how have you as an artist or raptivist seen yourself grow since that sort of campaign and, you know, thing you like that got done? You know, how have you progressed as an artist through that?
So a lot of people didn't know Tweek as Tweek, a person who raps or whatnot. Like, oh, Tweek, you rap. They was mainly knowing me as Tweek the organizer, okay. Tweek the activist, okay. And whatnot. And it's like, yo, I also do this. Once I start, I decided to go serious and be for real with it.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, the first thing I decided, though, was I do not want to be labeled a conscious rapper.
Tyler Pauly, Mozak, why not?
Because
I mean, I don't know.
Once you're boxed in that, I kind of feel like they put you. I feel like you're in a certain spotlight. I feel like you have to behave a certain type of way.
Sure.
There's some problematic shit you're not supposed to do. They're like, oh, you woke, you conscious. Why are you like this? It's like, motherfucker, I'm human. I ain't say I was 100% problematic free. I have learned a lot of fucked up problematic shit that I was taught over the, you know what I'm saying, over my years of life.
Yeah.
But, oh, don't get it twisted, honey. I'm definitely far from perfect. But just because I'm talking about these issues, this is not the only thing you finna get from me. I'm versatile with it when it comes to my music. I literally talk about everything from the social justice issues that I work on to dancing, you know, getting the girls,
hey,
looking good. Y'all know this shit, man. To the smoking, to the drinking, to whatever it is that I feel like talking about, rapping about, I'ma do that shit. And as far as the growth part of that is, I definitely feel like I definitely fell off lyrically.
Okay.
From where I first, when I started long time ago, 2006, 2007, if I would have kept that on, ain't no telling where the hell I'd be.
How and when did you start and why? I guess you said when you started, but like how did you start and like why? And then why did you stop doing it? Was it?
I've been writing since 6. I actually started off singing. I used to want to be a singer until back in grammar school, I seen some guys rapping.
Yeah.
And it was more like, you can't rap. I could do that shit too, right? Yeah. It's like, you're a girl. You're not going to be good. Oh, I got something for that ass type shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I also was part of a group. We was called STO, Shorty's Taking Over. It was me, two other women homies, my homie Jaquel, my homie Nooney, and my...
Shout out to Jaquel and Nooney.
Yeah, and my man Nanook. Love folks. That was the group, STO. Yeah, and when another student transferred in, he is now my god brother, my big brother, blood couldn't make us thicker, my brother Trey. He was like, yo, I'm in a group and we called STO. We was like, what?
What?
We can't have the same name. So we changed our name. We became YGG, Young Go-Getters.
Okay.
The group shit really didn't work out because it was like, you got hella personality. I was kind of like bossy. I kind of like, kind of made myself the leader type shit. And it's like, who told you you could be the leader? That's just, I don't know.
Self-proclaimed leader.
Yeah,
I've heard that before.
There you go.
Countless of times.
And it's like, yeah, I would even write verses for the other members for whatever song we was working on. I was just good at it, right? Yeah. My writing skills. That shit ended. It was short-lived, you know. I was in this music music program, sponsored by After School Matters at this living complex at Lawless Garden down in Bronzeville. called Institute for Positive Living, and they ran this the music program. Shout out to John Lester, because that's the one who started me and got me with the music. So in that program, we was taught how to use Reasons. It's how to make beats, Fruit Loops, how to write the songs, how to record them, how to produce a beat, how to make an album cover. We was in different groups. My group, I was called... the group I was in was called the Lyrical Goblins. I think it was me and another girl. If not, I think I was the only girl in that group or whatnot.
Right.
The skills was on still. I was also writing for the other groups still. As far as making the beats on Fruit Loops and Reason, I was like, fuck this shit. I don't want to do this. I just want to rap.
Yeah.
I just wanted to perform. I just wanted to get on the mic. Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted to do. They were like, no, but the program. I was like, yeah, but I'm not going to do that shit.
I get it.
Nah, I ain't want to do that shit. So that's what I did. And before Tweek, I used to go by Jay Illa. That was my name.
Like
Jay.
Illa?
Yep. J-I-L-L-A. Okay. That was my
name.
Well,
I'm glad you changed it. I'm glad.
Yes, I did too. Like, that's when I also discovered like Jay Dilla.
Yeah.
Like, I was
like, he's
what?
Like 10 years.
And the shit, a fucking legend, man. Definitely important to music. So once I discovered that, I was like, nah. But see, that was around the time I was giving up on my music. So I was like, fuck the name. Yeah. You know, I really didn't care. And then
how and why were you giving up on it? Was it you're into other stuff like that?
Low confidence, low self esteem. The people who I wanted to believe in me really wasn't believing in me. They was like, nah, this shit's it's not a promising career. You need to do something else.
Yeah,
and it's like you really don't have much when you really don't have a support system. And me being young and, you know, not really even, like I said, knowing myself, I really couldn't even be the support system I needed because, you know, I'm still learning and finding that shit out. So I gave up on it. But I will always remix anybody's song right then and there on the spot.
Yeah.
If you hang out with me, anybody who has hung out with me more than once, I could bet my last dollar, my last dime, they have voice memos in their phone to this day, recordings of me rapping.
Yeah.
I swear to God. That's anybody, if any of y'all out there got those recordings, they definitely go, yo, definitely, oh shit, freestyling of Tweek, freestyling, remixing anybody shit. Yes, anybody shit.
And so we look at what you're doing now, and so you got like the hashtag Trauma Center campaign.
Hey.
You know, how'd you get involved? Yeah, how'd you get involved with that?
2010.
Was this the first like organizing adventure? Because I think we still don't have like the impetus of the radicalization moment. How you got into organizing here in the city?
So that's it. That campaign is what did it for me. I was a sophomore at Hyde Park Academy, and two people who I love and cherish dearly to this day, Fresco and my homie Veronica, they came to my classroom at the time. They also were students of Hyde Park. We weren't homies at this time. Mm-hmm. They were, and I think, seniors at the time. And they're like, yo, we are part of this group. This is what we do. We have a campaign, blah, blah, blah. I ain't know what the hell a trauma center was.
Right.
So
I don't know what it is still.
They educated us on what a trauma center was and what they're doing here, you know? Again, shout out to Coach James because they came in Coach James' class.
Yeah,
Coach James, he was my coach too for softball. And he was also the history teacher, social studies and whatnot. So they came and they was like, yo, this is what we do. And so I decided, okay, you know, this is for a good cause. It sounds like something I can, I definitely could fuck with. At the same time, a close homie, he wasn't my best friend at the time, but Jamel, he told me about it. He was like, yo, we got this campaign. Blah, blah, blah. This is why we do it. Damian Turner, which was my homie, my best friend, Jamil, his cousin. The trauma center campaign was sparked because Damian Turner was shot in a drive-by on 58th and Cottage. 61st and Cottage, I'm sorry. 61st and Cottage. And the University of Chicago is on 58th and Cottage.
Right.
That's the closest hospital to him in range. They took Damian to Northwestern because UOC did not have a trauma center or whatnot. So Damian passed away in the ambulance before it even reached to Northwestern. That's a 20-plus minute drive from the south side. The closest trauma center for adults, that is Northwestern or Christ out there in Oakland. That's super far from the south side, from 61st and College. Exactly. Right. So that started. And then once I got my foot in the door with that, it's just been a wrap ever since. I've been down with the shit since then. Shout out to the Trauma City campaign, because trauma center services for adults will be coming at the new adult emergency room for U Medicine. It's opening December 29th. That's the emergency room part.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So what's happening in May?
In May 1st, 2018, they will start providing trauma center services for adults.
Yeah, that's
because all of it, it's all in one. Okay. So, yes. So,
okay.
Yes. The trauma center services for adults will start in May 2018. So, that was a 5-year long campaign. And it was the most stressful, tearful, doubtful, definitely. It was several times when I'm like, yo, I want to give up. The shit's not happening. And a lot of people were like, oh, you guys are going about it the wrong way, protesting, blocking traffic. It's not going to get anything. And all I got to say is, look at us now, motherfuckers. That shit is happening. It happened because of Black kids in Woodline. That's one thing I don't want nobody to forget. Yeah. No one was talking about bringing this shit to the South Side. No one was talking about furthering services to help those on the South Side. They closed down several mental health clinics. So that's another service that they will be providing, you know, at this new adult emergency room. Right. So because of that, because of the kids, the Black kids in Woodline, the poor Black kids, seeing that this is why all of this is taking place. This is why all of this is happening. Why all of this is, you know, falling into suit or whatever you want to call it, because of that shit.
Yeah.
And I ain't gonna lie, it's the best thing I've ever decided to do was to join a group or organization and become an organizer, an activist. And I owe so much to my homie Veronica, who trained me up on the way. And my homie Fresco guided me a little bit in the beginning, you know, just showing me the ins and outs and how to talk to media, how to talk on camera, how to answer questions. Being comfortable in front of the camera and all that shit came with ease. Like, I never had a problem really talking in front of big crowds or whatnot, but it was just how I went about it type shit. Because I'll go on there like, yo, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
Just like, fuck, hell no, nah, you know, fuck everything. Yeah. It's like, nah, tweak, you can't.
I get it. Channel that energy.
I was like, kind of like the firecracker who would sometimes steer off road. Of Veronica be like, yeah, tweak. Let me get you right together.
Right.
So shout out to community for that. Shout out to them for that. Love them for that. So
that's good. That's important. I feel like that's something that isn't missed with activists in Eastern Chicago. Is that like folks like us in their 20s or so will say like, yeah, we're doing this work, but like, it's the youngins, the shorties who are like really out here and really the fire of the group. The shout out to Asada's daughters who live on the front lines of No Cotto Academy. Yes, like, we're all out here doing things, you know, pooping the 20s, 30s, 40s even. But it's like, it's we say the youth, we mean like the teens. We mean the kids younger than that. The babies, they're really out here.
The future lies in them.
On the front lines.
I say the same thing when I look at my younger siblings, which they are 18 and 19. Their upbringing, it was definitely different. The way they operate now, me and my friends and my sister, we look at each other like, yo, what the hell? What the hell was in the milk? First of all, they big as shit. My little sister's big as hell. They big as hell. Like, I'm like, damn, I wasn't this big when I was 13, 14. Like,
it's the chicken nuggets and the Starbucks.
It's something, like, man. We don't forget Starbucks in the hood, so it's definitely not the fucking Starbucks. But it's just like it's definitely. But whatever, the truth lies in the youth. It lies in the youth. When people who second guess our judgment or the way we do things, now time has changed. Yes. So to the older folks who used to doing shit back in the old day or the old way, it's like, nah, we don't do that shit no more. Just like them, I compare it to like them big ass, super brick ass first iPhones. Oh, now we didn't change, my man. We got the iPhone X. We got animated facial emojis that talk back to us and shit, you know? We ain't doing shit back in the old day the way y'all used to do it. And plus, y'all was super misogynistic and sexist about the way y'all went around shit. And we not just not doing it that way no more.
Right. Back in the day, being misogynistic, sexist, whatever. Like, and it's not like that now. It's less like that now. How important is that? And how does that? How is?
Here's an example. How does
that change?
Well, how do you? Okay.
Example. Anecdote. I love it.
Here's an example. So on Facebook. Everything happens on Facebook. It was a meme going around about a woman and man. They're like, yo, if you're married or whatnot, sus, if you live in a house and you have to with a man and you have to pay half of the rent, you need a new man type shit.
Right.
It's like a real man, he'll cover the whole rent, whatever, all the bills type shit. And the woman, all she has to do is stay home, cook, take care of the house and the kid. That's gender roles. And me being a lesbian who dates women, that shit does not fly with me. Ain't no, you the boy when you the girl when I do this. You hell no. No. What I go for is equality. Same thing I do, you can do. But people say, hell nah, man. This how I was raised. This is how they did it back in the day. Just because that's how you was raised and was done in the back in the day doesn't mean it was done wrong and it wasn't sexist.
Right.
But if that's what floats you, your boat and you and your partner cool with that, cool. Don't push that shit on me and don't think I'm finna live like that and do it that way because I would not. Oh, only dudes take out the garbage. Nope. I got to take out the trash too. I do it too. Same thing I do, my girl does. Ain't no, but see, from the cis point of view, a lot of them, they were like, oh, so which one of you guys is the boy one? We look at each other like, ain't no boy in this fucking relationship. Yeah, what you mean, women, which one is the boy one? Oh, you judging me based off my clothes and how aggressive or my masculine energy. That's what it is. And I think that's the most stupidest shit ever.
Yeah.
To judge someone based off that. And that's one thing I say when I say I don't like to be labeled and I no longer go under the label of stud. Because the way I'm dressed, I am the most very flamboyant feminine person I know. I have always been this way, even in comparison to my partners. I have always been the very girly one or whatever you want to call it. But even in the LGBTQ community, it's very divisive. And you're looked down upon by the very masculine-centered women who identify as butch or stud and like me, they're like, what are you doing? Or hell no, you ain't no real stud. You ain't no, I'm like, the fuck? If I want to drop this ass and pop it, oh, that's what I'm going to do. Ain't no, you supposed to do this. There's some invisible code book that's going around that I obviously didn't read and I obviously don't give a fuck about. But, you know, I'm a woman and I embrace both energies, my masculine energy and my feminine energy. I kind of call myself 60-40. Sometimes I be 50-50, but that has nothing to do with you. This is me. This is how I am. I dress the way I dress because it's comfortable. You put on a fucking tight skirt. Yeah, shit's uncomfortable. Girls don't even like wearing that shit half the time. My girl like wearing my clothes because it's more comfortable. She don't like wearing that tight ass shit. She don't. That's why I don't get my tank top. She takes them all. So like, I don't be getting that shit, man.
No, and it's really great to be able to talk and like see someone who is using a narrative and really creating and defining one for themselves. You know, like you're both, you create music as well as you've been involved in activism. Therefore, you like, you know, you've put yourself in positions where you it's interesting because like you didn't want to go to school, but you're still constantly educating yourself.
Absolutely.
You
feel what
I'm saying? Educating so like, folks too.
Yeah
and by means in which like, it's easy, or it's not easy, but it reaches another group of people that mm-hmm. are just like us. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like some people can't learn reading from a book. Some people can't learn looking at shit. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. and so you kind of find people where they're at, and it's like the music, it's like from the tracks I've been able to hear and from the freestyles I've been able to hear you spit, it's what you would like think of hip hop. But then you're listening to it, and it's, I can totally see how you don't define yourself as a conscious rapper.
And it's like, but it's a mix. And so it's like, okay, it's like, what am I getting here? What am I listening? Mm-hmm. So it really makes you kind of like, as a listener, kind of be like, okay, where's this at? Where's this going? And then once you feel it, the beat starts jiving. Mm-hmm. With like your newest track, which we're probably going to talk about, like, you know, Super High. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's attractive. Mm-hmm. It's entertaining. Mm-hmm. And you got to learn something. So I'm like, all right, this was good. I feel with that. So, you know, and so we need that. Like, you're someone who has learned to harness, you know, your own narrative and really be able to do that for the greater good. Right. And that's really where we feel it.
Put it out in the world in a way that's fun. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, in a way that's fun, right, digestible, in a way that
unique. Like, you know, it's like it really is unique, and like, you know, you're genuine in who you are. Like, it's not like, you know, sometimes we have to put on a facade, or like, right, you know, like, oh, I gotta be tweaked for a moment, or I gotta be, it's like that's not an issue.
Definitely,
you
know what I'm not. Back to when I just found myself into my freshman year, sophomore year, going into the beginning of my sophomore year, it was that moment when shit was just a wrap. I came into myself, you know, I discovered me. And from that point, it's just been one after that. The more I learned about myself, I started discovering shit. I started loving myself. That's what it was. I started loving myself. And then that's exactly how I started acting. I didn't sugarcoat shit. I didn't stop being me for no one. And about Super High, so a lot of people say, yo, who produced the beat? And when people ask me who produced the beat, it's mostly of, I think, I'll call them new agers, the younger crowd, or people who don't, I ain't gonna say really not know music, but those who are born in the 80s or 90s like me, who really love hip hop, rap, or whatnot, they would know off back it's the same beat. It's JJ Sad's Supersonic beat. Yeah, they had a song called Supersonic.
Oh, look at her playing that.
So, when writing the song, and judging just based on lyrics, I'm like, yo, this shit's so hot. I let a big booty girl ride shotgun in my whip. She put that drink in her cup and put that blunt to her lip. She blowing smoke out her nose while she taking a sip. She doing tricks, plus she keep that 22 on her hip. I should put it to an original beat. Then again, it's like, but yo, this shit's so hot. And goes so perfect with this exact beat. I'm just going to use it for promo use only and throw it on my mixtape. And that's exactly what I did. I was in love with the beat. I love Supersonic. I love that song so much. The moment I hear it, I instantly...
It's our movie. What are my hips doing? Oh my God.
And now when I hear it out of the blue, I just sing my song. Even there with the original song playing, I just sing my shit. And when I hear other people sing my shit instead of their shit, I'm like, yo, it's someone.
There you go.
You know? Super High came about. It's a storyline. I talk about, you know, meeting a couple of girls, how I do what I do when I do it. Did I, you know, put a little shot flavor in there? Mixed about,
got to.
Yeah, of course, you know, some shy seasoning. And then it was just on one after that. Shout out to my homie Serena, who I love so dearly. She shot this video for me using, she's also a student at DePaul.
Hey,
yeah, so she shot this for me, you know, free of charge, just off the strength of, yo, Tweek, I fuck with you. Tweek, I love you. I believe in you. And I'm like, nah, nigga. And shout out to my homie, Ariana, who directed the video, came up with the concept and shit for the video. Me and Ariana went to high school together or whatnot. Mm-hmm. We was cool. We knew each other back then, you know, but we wasn't super, super close.
Right.
You know, we just got super, super close from a mutual friend. And then from what she went to school for, what she's doing. And she was like, yo, when she heard the song, she said, I want to direct the video. I wasn't even going to do a video for this song. Yeah. Man, shout out to everybody who showed up to the shoot. Shout out to the Let Us Breathe Collective for letting us use the breathing room to shoot the space.
Yeah.
Shout out to the hood, man, over there off the 9079 shit. Chatham, Auburn Gresham. That's why I shouted out the other scenes of the video. Shout out to my hood. So shout out to the hood.
Shout out to everybody.
Yeah, shout out,
shout out to Shy Seasoning. I like that.
Yeah, Shy Seasoning.
We gotta start using it. If we use it, we'll give you
a hey, hold up. Shout out to Burp in the Brown Town, you know.
Hey, shout out
to the B&B. Hey. Soapbox. Shout out to Soapbox.
Hashtag Shy DNA.
Hey.
But to kind of wrap it up, I know we talked about a bunch of different things and I think they're all related. What would you say to either an activist or a rapper or anyone in between that, Milo? How do you push your narrative forward in a way that's truthful to you and that helps the world?
First off, before you can help a world, help anybody, you got to help yourself. So once you help yourself, you discover yourself, you love yourself. And then once you do that, everything else literally, I'm not going to say it's going to be easy.
Sure.
But it'd be easier to fall in place type shit. Because once you see someone love themselves, it's like, what? I love you. I love the way you love yourself.
Right.
Go self. That's what that is. So be true to yourself. Stay true to yourself. Believe in yourself. If no one else does, believe in yourself. And then if there's something, a cause, a fight, whatever it is that you believe in, don't stop believing in it because you get 10 other people who don't believe in it. And you're like, oh, 10's greater than one, it's just me. That don't mean a damn thing. That don't mean a damn thing. Because I bet once you get shit popping or create some buzz or whatever, those 10 who wasn't too fond of it at first, they'll turn around and be like, hey, that's just how the shit works. So stay true to yourself, love yourself, and
as we always like to say, stay black, stay brown, stay queer,
stay tuned, stay turned.
When I cop back, police better run.
Tension is high, man, these niggas is irate. You can see it in their eyes, they wanna violate. Screaming out, oink, oink, bang, bang. Gang, 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 gang. Murder, 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 they mind state. I just made me a meal and still militant. This ain't conscious rap, this shit ignorant.